Okanagan Mountain Provincial Park by lightning and then spread. And it was all over the news at that time. And it claimed more property and was responsible for more property damage and so on than any other wildfire in BC history at that time. I was so struck when the book came out last fall on the heels of the 2023 wildfire season, which was record-breaking in a huge way in British Columbia. I was so struck by how that 2003 wildfire, which had seemed so huge, and the 2003 wildfire season, which had just astonished all of us in British Columbia, it had been far eclipsed by the season of 2023. I mean, the damage, the number of hectares burnt was multiples more last year. And it was really sobering just to reflect on that, because here we are, it's happening. And there's no question our fiction is going to increasingly represent that happening.
What about, as you say, people are astounded by books that they missed. Might have missed it in 2010, but now it's 20. I mean, it's 2024. Things that an author might have been seeding out either through a story or through a factual book. How do you think people feel about not taking action sooner? Because I'm thinking, looking at the Caribbean, each of these places, there's so many people vacation there. At the same time, the people were enjoying the lushness and lavishness of being entertained. There were people talking about climate change and how the temperature of the water in the Atlantic was going to be a problem. Do you think people might go back to looking at that book or asking themselves more of, what can I do or what should I have done?
I think we're gonna have lots of regrets as we move into the kind of climate impacted future, and especially younger folks wondering why, the generation in power at the time didn't do more. And I think it's a puzzling kind of human response to the we don't take account for the cost of inaction. So we see the cost of doing a thing, but we're not very good at assessing the cost of not doing the action. So switching to renewable energy and the technology transfer required for that has a cost. But not doing it and continuing to burn fossil fuels also has a cost. And we're just not very good at that accounting, and especially because we don't account for impacts to the environment. We just view that as kind of an economic sense. It's just there for us as a resource rather than something that's keeping us alive and necessary to all of our well-being. And so I think there's that fundamental barrier. And if we start now to experience, as it's more common, I mean, people in the city of Vancouver are very, very connected to wildfires now because the air quality in Vancouver has been impacted in several years in a really distressing way. And so that's something that's much more front of mind for people, which I think does make it easier to take actions to try and reduce the risk of wildfire, to, improve air quality, because it's something everyone has personally experienced. So I think in a sad way, the fact that we're all having these personal experiences with various climate-related events and emergencies is hopefully going to make it easier to take steps so that hopefully we have fewer regrets. Yeah, it's that personal, people need to have that personal visceral experience, unfortunately, to see the threats that scientists can flag as a real thing, a real danger that needs and warrants real action to try and prevent or mitigate.
Yeah, I think writers also flag. I'm going to ask you a few more questions about that, but right now I want to say this is CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsfc.ca. I'm Charlotte Farrow, your own sister C here in this place to be, and our show is called Saluau. Stands for my guest and I speak up so you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. That takes me into a question to my guests. My guests today are Frances Peck and Lisa Boudreau Bedeau. Causes that you've been involved in, how do you see the role or function of writers in causes? Well, even another question before that, because you mentioned being able to talk without hitting each other. So much of the talks that have happened around women's rights, abortion, climate, people are yelling at each other. And fights have broken out in some places. So the process that you go through, are you talking about what parts of the process of writing do you think can help make people more able to civilly discuss issues with each other?
I think I'm going back in my mind, Charlotte, to when we started talking, and I was mentioning that just for myself, if I sit down to write something, what I'm writing is it's got to come from an authentic place in me, I guess. And thus far, I haven't sat down to write with a cause in mind per se. Like I don't really see myself as a writer who is probably driven by causes in terms of what I write. And yet, because I'm a human in the world and surrounded by society, as the story is taking shape, I find that, of course, certain societal issues find their way into the story. And and then, of course, as I step back from what I've written and see, oh, there's a, the theme of class is treated. I mean, there's one example that's a theme that I cover in both of my books, probably a little bit more so in my first novel, The Broken Places, from a couple of years ago. That deals a lot with class, economic class, and the haves and the have-nots. When the great earthquake hits Vancouver, and some characters are thrown together, as happens in that novel. They're characters from really different backgrounds, and they have different levels of wealth and different levels of entitlement. And the question that I explore is how do they live together? What are the conflicts and tensions that simmer because they've been thrown together by circumstances? And in that world of devastation where there's no power, there are no services, you have to shelter in place, your cell phone doesn't work, your landline doesn't even work, like everything is down. Who is actually able to manage that situation? And it isn't necessarily the people who have all the power in the pre-earthquake world, the people who have more common sense knowledge, the more working class folks are the ones who come to the forefront when we're in that position of catastrophe. So that I just give that as an example. Like there's an example of something that, emerged in that novel. I have like a lot of gay people in my family and in my circles of friends. And so again, in the broken places, there's a couple that's gay, but they don't talk about that as an issue, if you know what I mean. They just are. Like they're just two men who happen to live together and be long-term partners and have relationship struggles. But I do hope when readers read characters like that, that it helps, I guess, to normalize those characters for them. Like I guess if a reader, well, I can't imagine a reader picking up my book and being homophobic. I mean, but maybe let's say they were. I guess I would like to think that if they just read about a couple who happen to be gay, that it might make them realize, like, hello, they're just people like the rest of us, and who we go to bed with at night is irrelevant
Not
to
anybody's
anything.
business.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that's all to say that when it comes to causes, to get back to your question, I think they're maybe embedded in my fiction because they're part of the society that I'm trying to write about, but I don't sit down to write motivated by the cause. I'm very character motivated. Usually what starts me off on a story is a person. It's the character, and then we go from there.
I have to flag that because in Frances's more recent novel, Uncontrolled Flight, one of the main characters is a woman working in a male-dominated industry as a flight crash investigator. And my background is engineering, and I was the first woman engineer at the company that I worked for. And that really resonated with me, the complexities of just her navigating that space, just trying to do her job, but having this added layer of kind of complexity to things because it's a traditionally male-dominated space. And so I think that really resonates with me, Francis, what you're saying about how it's the society we live in and kind of exploring aspects of that where it might be, just challenges that people face in an environment because they're in a minority or they're not Yeah, and this the additional layer of struggles they might have as a result of that. But it's not about that. That's just layered in throughout the story in a really beautiful way.
Well, and it's very much the same with your book Adrift as well, because climate change is there. I mean, it's inescapable because it shapes the world that the story takes place in. But it's not a story about climate change. It's a story about this character who has lost her identity and that whole question, who is she? And is the who she is determined by her past and the memories which she doesn't have, or is there something essential about her in the present that makes her who she is? And that whole search for identity I found really compelling in the book. And that really, in many ways, doesn't even seem to have much to do with the climate change background. So yeah, the climate change is part of the society, the overall world in which the story takes place.
Yeah, I think the climate change as well. A person today, after I think I watched several different newscasts last night, but when they said the power is out, Grenada, that there's nothing, there's no building standing here, that a person on this side reading a book like that, because it seems unimaginable. But now you have a character so that that character can help somebody who's really picturing this is what that person that they're talking about in the newscast, this is what they're going through. And so I think that while you said you're not associated with any particular causes, I know Iron Dog Books has quite frequently had readers or presentations around social justice or community issues. Could you tell us a little bit about the process? Were you producers of the program that was held? Can you tell a little bit about that process, and also about Iron Dog, because they are, I think about Iron and a dog. I think the dog, the dog could either be biting somebody, or the dog is standing in front of this iron door, saying, "Not here, not on my watch." So, tell us a little about your events and that social interaction.
Yeah, so I think the origin of the talk that we did was Francis and I meeting and kind of this interesting just dynamic about how both our books got tagged through just kind of the marketing process as thrillers, and us kind of questioning, are they thrillers, and what does it mean to be a thriller, and what does it mean when you categorize books in this way, and how books are very complicated stories that touch and dive in into various kind of topics and might pull on threads of multiple genre categories. And so it was just this interesting kind of process going from a creative product to a more commercial product that's being sold and has to fit on a shelf, and the decisions that are made about which shelf it fits on. And we thought this might be of interest to other writers and readers, and just who kind of question this whole categorization of our world when stories are complex things, people are complex things, and categorization helps and limits us. And there's just something really interesting there that we were both really intrigued by. And reaching out to Iron Dog Books, I think they've been a great supporter of Adrift, and I think Francis's two books as well. And just personally, as an ethos, the fact that they're an Indigenous-owned bookstore is, I think, a beautiful thing, and trying to support those Indigenous-owned businesses in our community is huge, and wanting to see them succeed and thrive. And it's been really exciting to see them grow in their storefront. And yeah, they were really open to hosting us. And I think it was this idea of kind of writers and readers coming together for conversations, not just being about readers. So it's a bit of a different thing for them to do that. And I think because our books were all about complex humans, quite character driven. And so they did, in all their different ways, touch on various aspects of just what it means to be a messy human navigating this world that we're in. I think that touched on the kind of story and conversations that Iron Dog is looking to have in their space. I think they're just great supporters of local writers as well. So, like, yeah, hugely thankful for them providing the space and hosting us. It was very generous of them.
Yeah, Iron Dog says on their website, in their About Us section, they say bookstores are more than just retail businesses.
Yes.
They are centers of community engagement and discourse. And they really, I think, embody that statement. And not everybody knows that they began as a mobile bookstore. They began as a book truck, in fact, kind of
Yes.
like a bookmobile. And, and talk about community engagement. They were actually going into communities to bring the books to those people who were not served by an independent bookstore. And they would show up at festivals and things like that, bringing books to the people instead of just sitting back and waiting for people to come to the books. So kudos to them for doing that. They did, in due course decide to go with a bricks and mortar bookstore, which is what they have now. But I always think that's pretty amazing that that was their first model for the business is, yeah, get a lot of great books together, include a lot of indigenous books, indigenous authored and books about indigenous topics and other topics and writers who are going to basically stimulate discourse in the community and then take that stuff to the community.
Yes, I had the pleasure of being on that truck, discovering it was one of the music festivals that was happening maybe 2017, before COVID. And it was just a joy watching, they had a space where some little kids were sitting down. They had a space where you could just ask questions. They asked if you had water. They weren't pushing you to buy stuff, come in and experience it. If you see something that you like, you could buy it. And so I thought this is really a wonderful community experience that they now, I think there's a walking tour, book walking tour, and they're in the center and they show where people can go and they find books that are really around community development, strength of development, because the 312 main building is in that little illustration they have of a kind of a pathway that connects the bookstores or businesses that are more social, have a greater social consciousness. Now, again, with the business of writing, because we said sometimes the problem people have. I'm a writer. I've published two books of poetry. I published through Arthur House, which is next to self-publishing because they don't give you any marketing assistance. But I think the people that have street festivals, like the all day where Main Street is closed or different places are closed, it gives people an opportunity to come out and meet the people behind the counters, get a chance, musicians. Writers have a chance to not just be on the stage, do their thing, and go, but are down mixing among people. What do you think of what is involved in the business of doing it? When you have to send out letters, can you walk us through a little bit of the process of what an independent writer goes through, either trying to get a publisher or to get their books on the market? Because there are all these things that are popping up on my phone or YouTube every day. Be a writer, write a book in 30 days, take our course, and it's not particularly helpful. So can you talk a little bit about that process of, where you have to get into the business of marketing your book?
Well, I can kick that off, and then maybe Lisa, you'd like to add a few things, because it's a huge topic you're asking about there, Charlotte. There's so much to say. But, the first thing that a writer has to think about is whether they want, I would say the first thing is that they have to decide if they want to pursue traditional publishing. So, do they want to be published by a publisher? Which Lisa and I have done, and Robin Yateman, who was on our panel last night, has done too. Or do they want to self-publish their work? Or do they want to be somewhere in between? Because there are any number of hybrid publishers who have some aspects of traditional publishers, but some aspects of self-publishing as well. So that's a big decision to make. And then what you do, that the business path that you follow, then depends on which direction you're going in. So, because I write literary fiction first and foremost, when the time came for me to think about publishing, I really did not think about self-publishing. And there was just a practical reason for that. Literary, self-published literary fiction does not do well, it doesn't get recognized. Readers of literary fiction don't tend to go to Amazon, let's say, to discover their latest reads. They discover the books that they want to read through different methods that are better served by a traditional publisher. So I was had it pretty firmly in mind that I wanted to try to get published by a traditional publisher. And so I did get an agent quite early on. And there's a long, twisted story. I mean, as I mentioned to you, Uncontrolled Flight, my current novel, I wrote that back in 2012, 2013, and it was only published in 2023. That's a decade in between, right? And all I can say about that decade to synthesize it all is that getting published by a traditional publisher, you have to think of it as being a war of attrition. Basically, it's the person or people who are left standing who are likely to get published eventually. I mean, there are definitely exceptions. There are writers who get published right out of the gate and they make a name for themselves and they do well with their book and then they're off to the races. You know, there goes there begins their career as a writer. But for most of us toiling away in the trenches, if I can continue the warfare metaphor, we get shot at again and again and again and again. We hear no, no, no. We hear, I loved it, but I'm not going to publish it. This was a great book, but we're not publishing it. We couldn't put the book down, but we're not going to pick it up.
Oh, yes.
You know, and it just goes on and on. And your business model, I think if you're going to go that route, has to involve a lot of armor. You have to just be willing to feel the feelings of rejection, sulk for an hour or a day or a week and pick yourself up, dust yourself off and do it all over again. You just have to keep at it. And if you're still standing 10 years later, you're going to hit the publisher who says, I love your book and I'm going to publish it.
Well, let our listeners know again, your name, your website, how to get in touch with you, where they can buy your books.
Sure. Well, I'm Frances Peck, and my website is francespeck.com, so fairly easy to remember. And my first novel is called The Broken Places. It was named a best book of 2022 by the Globe and Mail. I was really happy about that. And it was also shortlisted for the Rakuten Kobo Emerging Writer Prize, too. So that's the first book, The Broken Places. And my new novel is called Uncontrolled Flight. And both of those books are available anywhere that you like to buy your books, everywhere from independent booksellers, be they bricks and mortar or be they online booksellers, right on through to the big guys, Indigo, Barnes & Noble, if you're in the United States, Amazon and so forth. So very easy to order. And they're available in both print book and ebook form, not audiobook, I should clarify, because people often wonder about that.
Yes, and the library now has a little cart with audiobooks on it. And they say there's been a 49% increase in people getting audiobooks. Audiobooks.
Yeah, they're super popular. And yes, for the libraries too. And thank you for mentioning libraries, because I should also say, I mean, it's not just about buying a book, right? There are lots of people who don't want to or can't afford to buy a book. And I'm delighted the local libraries all through the Lower Mainland, all through British Columbia, have been really good about having both of my novels there to borrow. So your listeners will probably be able to track down my books through their local libraries too. Yeah.
Yes, I put in a plug as well for Vancouver Public Library and the library system, because they have, I was in the library for one thing, but I saw this little cart and the cart was there saying, check out audiobooks or check out, they specifically mentioned audiobooks, but they also, during the book week last year, they had an example of how you could get, if you were an author and you wanted to get your book in the public library system, they had someone there with the forms. They said, we have the forms today, they could make an appointment. And I thought, that's really wonderful that the library would say, you know, here we are. we can help you as a self-published author. And so I was visiting the There were so many things. It was Book Vancouver. There were a lot of events. But this particular event, it was just so pleasant, you know, that you could go there. When people said it's a simple form, it wasn't 20 pages you had to download and, you know, sing a song to get put in. So I really, you know, applaud the, how they are available to authors to help them get their books and their audiobooks in the public library system.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Most libraries have a form that readers can also suggest books that the library purchased to add to their collection. So if you're ever in love with a book and want your library to have a copy, if you search their website, often there's a form that you can fill out. Just make that suggestion. That's lovely.
Will either or both of you be hosting any other events over the summer?
I think I'm not, but Francis, do you have something coming up?
I am going to be in the lineup for Word Vancouver, which you know, you were speaking about festivals earlier in our conversation, and that's an annual festival that celebrates books and writing and reading and readers and so on. It has an online component. Word Vancouver does, like they have a number of events that run online in the lead up to the one day event, which is on Saturday, September the 28th. So not exactly summer, but that's probably the next big event that I have coming up. I'm going to be on a panel as part of Word Vancouver,
And that's the
and
Word Festival or Word Fan.
Word Vancouver. Used to be, way back in the day, it used to be called Word on the Street, but then they renamed themselves. That's going back a ways. So yeah, it's called Word Vancouver, and the it's very easy to find online. You know, just look up Word Vancouver, and they're the in-person festival on the 28th of September will all be held at UBC Robson Square. So that downtown Robson Square campus of UBC, so super accessible if you're, you know, on foot or using transit or anything like that. And Lisa, your stuff is pretty easy to get. Your book is easy to get hold of, I think, right? Adrift. I see it everywhere. Every time I go
Oh,
into a
that's good to
bookstore,
hear.
there's Adrift. It just is keeps going and going. It's a popular book.
That's awesome to hear. Yeah, so I'm Lisa Brito. You can find me online. My website is lisabrito.com, and my last name, since no one can spell it, is Brideau. So lisabrito.com. Yeah, and I'm lucky Adrift's available anywhere you buy books, at ebook, and I'm lucky that there is an audiobook format. So for folks who like their audiobooks, it is available that way. And same, local libraries have been fantastic. So it's pretty reliably available in libraries, which is wonderful. And I'll throw in a plug that I love doing book club conversations. So if anyone's book club reads Adrift and wants to reach out and schedule if your local visit or a Zoom drop-in, I love my book is full of mysteries, and so when I'm talking to people who haven't read it, there's a lot I can't say because I don't want to spoil the experience of reading it. And I love book clubs because there's no risk of spoilers. They've read it. We can get into all the details. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, feel free to reach out if your book club is interested and wants to read and have me drop by.
And ditto from me. I'm like you, Lisa. I love doing book clubs, and our books are similar in that respect, that there are a lot of secrets that get re gradually revealed and layers that get peeled back, and it's so nice to be able to talk about the ending, you know,
Yes.
and
Yes.
so on.
And I think the great thing, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned book clubs because I know churches, different types of groups, parenting groups, a lot of people form them and they talk a lot about the book. I was listening at a service, the end of an audio, what do you call it? Online church. And one of the things was coming up was the book club thing. And the pastor said, you know, I hadn't read a book lately, but I went to this thing and it was so good. Each week we moved ahead. And so, you know, he re recommended it as one of the things people might do as a positive, just self-care, just a positive enjoy life activity.
It's a good way to connect with people.
So speaking of enjoying life, I've really enjoyed this conversation with you, Francis and Lisa. I wish you every success in your book. And from just the things you've said, our listeners will probably say, hey, let's check out those two books. And to know that you can get it anywhere, the books are sold. Thank you to my listeners for being with us from 10 on Friday mornings. You know what we say? We speak up. My guest and I speak up, so you can listen up and act upon what you have heard. When people ask me what time it is, though, you know, I always say it's love time, poem time. Love time, poem time.